Hello, and welcome to the Inside AV's podcast, February the 21st, 2022. This is a midweek bonus episode and the second of our charging infrastructure series. On today's show, we're pleased to be joined by Matthew Bonnet, the CEO of Allego, a pan-European charging network. He also recently became the chair of Charge Up Europe, a trade association and lobbying group, which has a number of high-profile companies as members, including ChargePoint, Fastned, ABB, and BorgWarner. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, and Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you don't miss any of our surprise bonus episodes like this one. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Good morning. So this is the second episode in a series of midweek bonus podcasts centered on charging infrastructure, where we talk to people from different charging networks and utilities to get a sense of where we're at now, where we want to be in the future, and what are the challenges and opportunities involved. So Matthew, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are the CEO of Allego, which was founded, I believe, in 2013. You can correct me if I have that wrong.
That's right.
I understand that you've been in that role for maybe 2 years, and previously, you were the CEO of Compagnie Nationale de Rennes, CNR, which is the second largest renewable energy generation company in France. And you helped, I understand, develop that into a more global renewable energy company. And you also founded an outfit called E6, which is a European energy management platform for renewable energy from wind, solar, and hydro sources. So, and more recently, of course, as I mentioned, you've become the chair of Charge Up Europe, which bills itself as the voice of electric vehicle charging infrastructure industry, working towards an expeditious and effortless rollout of EV charging infrastructure in Europe. So clearly, you are a person with a lot of ambition, and your career seems to be centered around a more sustainable infrastructure and transportation. So I thought we could start by, if you could tell us like briefly, just how you wound up in this field and what is it that motivates you?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thank you very much for hosting me. I'm very happy to talk about our business and our industry, because as you have already mentioned and all your auditors knows now, well, we're really in a revolution in mobility. And just to come back on some points you've just mentioned of what I did before.
Okay.
I began in energy and in renewables. And at that time, well, 10 years ago, I installed the first chargers available, and they were very, very low rating. And the idea was to see how we could manage the balances, the discrepancies between our production of hydro production and a new use, which was at that time, the first EVs. It was not maybe very efficient because there were very few cars then. And again, the power was very low. But I was quite interested in that and to see, well, how in the future we were able to manage and to charge and to supply with new electricity this new mobility, because I was quite certain that it would come true. And that's what we see right now in Europe with a very, very high ramp-up of new EVs.
Awesome. So you're very into renewable energies and environment, I guess. Is that what's like motivating you?
Yes. Well, yeah, sure. And to be clear, regarding this aspect, I think that's important to highlight a point. When we talk about EVs, of course, that's very efficient to drive EVs. I mean, it's quite awesome in terms of ride. It's very smooth compared with trying to use your gears, for instance. But if you look at the mobility, I mean, in terms of CO2 emissions, well, if you want to supply the right energy in these vehicles, you need to have renewables or at least zero emission supply. And you have no choice. You need to have 100% renewable, because if you use coal, for instance, at the end of the day, if you look at all the cycle, you will emit more CO2 than the new standards for fuel cars right now in Europe. So if you want really a zero emission car, you will need to go through renewable energy. And that's what we provide in our charging station at Allego, 100% renewable energy.
Wow. So Allego is it's a fast growing charging network headquartered in the Netherlands, I believe. Last year, it saw over 6 million charging sessions, which was a 65% increase over 2020. And you saw revenue increase at an even higher percentage, 95%, to reach like 86 million euros or 97.7 million in US dollars. So tell us a little bit about Allego. Our audience is mostly in the US and maybe unfamiliar with it. So maybe start with which companies you're in, how many locations you have, what are the different power levels that you offer, and maybe like the medium term outlook with regard to growth.
Yeah, sure. With pleasure. So Allego, as said, we began in 2013 as a Dutch company. We began as a subsidiary of a grid operator. So we know about electricity, by the way, from our DNA. And at that time, we were already very interested in public charging. And we installed the first, I would say, a rollout of big in municipalities of important networks of slow chargers, what you call in the US level 2 chargers, in order to charge the first EVs. And very quickly, we decided to shift to a fast and ultra fast public station, because we consider that, well, if we want to see a big ramp up, and we will comment about the market, but in the future, home charging won't be enough, as a matter of fact. And if you want to charge on public chargers, you don't want to be stuck during 9 hours with a slow charger. So you need to charge quickly. And to do that, you need to go through fast, which is for us 50 kilowatt, or ultra fast till 300 kilowatt. So that's the reason why we are focused now in building these new public stations. And right now, Allego is the leading pan-European fast and ultra fast charging network. We operate more than 1,800 charging ports in this with this rating. We are active in 14 countries, and so we invest in our own charging station. That's one of our main business line. But we have as well a second business line where we sell to corporations comprehensive solutions of charging solution. For instance, with lease cars for lease companies, from home charging, with management of the flow and reimbursement of electricity, for instance, and as well installation of big charger for some premises for corporations in logistics, for instance.
All right. So I have a whole list of questions here, but maybe somebody else wants to have a turn here.
I'll jump in. Thanks again for coming on. One of the questions that I have, and one of the biggest barriers we have here in the U.S. Are called demand charges, where the peak that any specific site has, the peak power draw, the site then has to pay a penalty for pulling so much power, and it's onerous. It can be tens of thousands of dollars a month if the site has a lot of high power chargers. Does it work the same way in Europe? Do you pay these demand charges? Is it different? You know, maybe you could explain a little bit on how you deal with paying for such high amounts of power on a specific site.
Yeah, that's a very good question, because here we touch upon the bottlenecks of the development of EVs. But let me go back to the situation in Europe. Yes, we pay as well hefty amount of money regarding the power rating, which is kilowatts, and unfortunately it is capped as well with a maximum power, so a bit like the same in the US. But I do believe that the level is less expensive than in the US. That's one. So that's the reason why we can cope with that. The second point is that regarding fast and ultra fast, the charging station, which are paid by kilowatt hour, are more expensive than the slow chargers, but we have a very different reference level than in the US. The reference level here in Europe is the fuel price. And as you may know, in Europe, the fuel price is much higher than in the US. And the comparison for our customers and for any drivers is the comparison between the TCO between full fuel cars and EV cars. So that's the reason why, just to give you an idea what's going on right now. If you want to fuel your tank in Europe, you will pay around in some countries 8 euros by gallon, which is quite hefty. So maybe we have more room than in the US regarding the price of the charging station. So that's the reason why the peak demand is maybe less an issue than in the US. But anyway, we need to be very careful in the layout of our stations. And now we try to smart load, I would say, with smart charging in order to decrease the power. But our customers, they want power. If they want 300 kilowatt, they want to have 300 kilowatt. And that's and they are ready to pay for that, by the way.
Sure. Some of the U.S., and a quick follow-up, some of the U.S. infrastructure companies are offsetting these high demand charges by building on-site energy storage. You can buffer the peak demands. Is that something that you're also doing?
So we know that, of course, but right now the differences of the prices regarding the investment in these batteries compared with the price of these ratings is such that we can cope without this kind of technical solution right now, which is an advantage in order to roll out quickly our charging station. But in all our layout, we make sure that we can have for the future, maybe, because if the price increase or if there are some constraints in the grid, we could use this kind of solutions for batteries.
So here we were talking with a gentleman from Electrify America last year, and they're using energy storage, networking it, and then using it as a way to make a revenue stream, like selling back some load to utilities. And they use that as a revenue stream as well, like a smaller one. But is that something that you can see in Europe or no?
Yes. Yes, we can do that in some specific markets. What we call mostly, depending on the countries, by the way, it can be different. But it is globally speaking what we call ancillary services. So, for instance, you can resell it to the platform of the grid operators, for instance, here in the Netherlands. And just to mention as well that we have our own energy platform to make sure that we can buy directly on the market, for instance, power markets in the different countries we are in, or that we can plug renewable assets directly on our balancing perimeters in order to be sure to track, I would say, the power, the electron in real time coming from specific assets, but as well to be sure that we can have the right energy at the right price on the long term with power purchase agreements.
Can I ask, you operate in France, you operate in the Netherlands, two of the countries where Tesla are trialing opening up their closed network. What are your thoughts on helping EV drivers be as frictionless as possible? Because, of course, with that solution, you still have to have the Tesla app. Most people are used to pulling up with a RFID card or a credit card. The holy grail for many is plug and charge when enough networks have it, enough cars have it as well. So how do you feel about that learning curve and that friction that people moving to electric vehicles have to get used to? Because everyone knows how to dispense petrol at a pump. But what are your thoughts on how we make that as easy as possible with EV?
That's a very good question. First of all, we believe in plug and charge. So that's the reason why we are developing solutions for the next months. For all cars, not for only Teslas, so that you can directly charge and be recognized, authorized, and to have a seamless experience. It will happen at the end of the day because all the stakeholders have an interest to make it happen, because all the cars at the end of the day will be, at least in Europe, will be EVs. So we need to have a solution. I think we need to be fair, meaning that if we compare the experience we have with fuel cars, which has, to be clear, more than 100 years of experience and feedback with EVs, that is quite a nascent industry. Well, there are some hiccups, of course. That can be very cumbersome, because if you cannot charge, because you cannot pay, it can be horrible. But okay, anyway, I think it's quick, and we're going to find a solution so that we can provide the right experience, which is really key for us to the drivers, because we need to offer, globally speaking, between the car and the charging experience, a superior product than the one before. Otherwise, we won't have the change, because the CO2 free emission promise won't be enough to change if we can't have a better product at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you're a member of CHARIN, the organization that drives forward the adoption of the CCS standard. And from your point of view of working in the industry, what's the shift happening in Europe between CHAdeMO? There's a huge installed base of Leaf drivers, and the feedback I get from them is they're starting to feel a little bit like, maybe I should sell my car now. Maybe I'm worried about doing a long road trip. How do you feel about those customers and the kind of customers that are using your units with CCS?
Well, that's true that the CHAdeMO is, I would say, the adoption is behind us, to be clear. So we are coping with a legacy fleet, and you're right to mention that. So that's the reason why we need to cope with this fleet, and meaning that we need to provide a solution for them. But that's true that it won't be the best solution, because first of all, they cannot withstand very high power rating. So if they want to plug at 150 kilowatt, they cannot. And it is a limitation not by the charging station, but because of the car. So I think that, well, they can live with their car, but if they want to make the most and of the new charging rate, they will need to use the CCS. So the next car will be a CCS. And by the way, I noticed that Nissan has shifted with their new cars with CCS. Yes. So to be honest, we need to attend and to provide a solution. And that's very, very important, meaning that we take care of every customers. But fortunately, I would say there will be one standard. It would be much easier for everyone and every drivers for the next years.
Right. Kyle, do you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about, hopefully you can hear me okay, because mic was freaking out.
Cool.
Martin brought up a great point, which is, you know, when someone rolls up to your station, we want the most frictionless experience possible. And I've been lucky to road trip using Allego chargers many times, actually, and always just roll up and tap an RFID card like this plug surfing card or similar, and it just works and it's great. So you had mentioned that you're working on supporting plug and charge when you roll up to a charger, which is great. But so for example, I've noticed some Allego chargers are in the same parking lots as Tesla superchargers, as Ionity stations, et cetera. How do you get someone to come and use your station over an Ionity, just for an example? Because like with us, some of the cars had a, you know, separate charging program with that charging manufacturer. Are you going to start offering free charging or charging incentives when someone buys a certain vehicle to incentivize them to use your network?
So that's a complex question, and let's try to answer it. First of all, regarding the payment, because that's a payment subject. So and to be clear, that's a wide world here, because you have the tokens. You can now people want to use as well NFC and credit cards to pay, and it's going to move and to shift. Why? Because the first adopters used some tokens, and it was really linked in Europe, in Northern Europe, with lease cars, for instance. And with a lease car, you had a token already embedded with all the EMSP. But what we see now is that more and more in some markets use credit cards, and they don't want to use tokens, for instance. So we need to cope with all of this payment solution. That's one, and that's very important to offer all this solution. And second, there can be some kind of fidelity program or royalty program with some OEM, and we are discussing that. And this push is driven from the demand we see from the OEM. So they are very interested to have some specific deals with royalty program. Well, if we use your network, we can have an advantage. It can be an experience with a seamless experience, for instance, or plug and charge or other or rate or whatever. And yes, we are discussing with them because there is a economic equilibrium, I would say. But what is very important for us, for any customers, because we can charge any cars and any customers, is to be sure that they can be charged. So either RFID or QR code or credit cards. That's the way it works right now. And we do not have, to be clear, a universal method, but that's the same with the fuel. Because you can use your car, you can have some credit, you have some fuel cards. So here, I think the standard again will be, the benchmark will be fuel experience. And we have many subjects and ways to pay a fork in order to fuel your tank. That's the same. And but at least we need to provide and to provide all these solutions.
Great. So according to your website, Allego is powered by 100% renewable energy, which is, you know, really awesome. Is that a competitive advantage for you? And are you able to charge customers a competitive rate? I don't know if renewable energy is like more expensive over there than traditional sources, or how does that work?
So yes, it is, because we buy some green certificates in some cases where we couldn't directly have some assets, renewable assets on our balancing perimeter. So it is, but so far it is not more expensive because we use this kind of energy. I do believe again that if we want to make this promise to have a CO2 free emission, you need to have this kind of energy. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So we will stick with that. And at the end of the day, because of the efficiency and because of the industrialization of renewables as well, the cost will be low.
So
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So how many, speaking of your DC fast charging sites, not the slower charging, what's the average amount of stations you have per location? And have you signed on to, say, site agreements that have built in into the contract allowing you to expand? Because we're already starting to see here in the U.S. some of the charging stations that were installed where a year or two ago they'd be empty, would pull in, it was always easy to plug in. But now all of a sudden all these new exciting electric cars are hitting the market, people are buying them, the stations are getting crowded. Every time we go to a DC fast charging location, we're not alone. Sometimes it's completely full and we have to wait to plug in. So have you built that into your network, the expandability? Is that already something you've done?
Yes, indeed, we do that. So basically speaking, we begin with, four, six high power charging ports. But we make sure with the contract we have with the landlord and the station that we can upgrade the station depending of the traffic we see. And that's something that is really critical for us. So that's the reason why when we talk about, and at Allego we talk about our backlog sites to roll out, and we have more 800 sites, we make sure that first we can roll out as many chargers as we want. That's one. And because we have long-term duration contract, 15 years or even longer, it's important to have these capabilities. And we want as well, in terms of business, on our sites, we sign an exclusivity. So that's the reason why, as well, in terms of feedback and return, we can increase the number of chargers. But the point is very important, the one you mentioned. So that's the reason why we monitor the utilization rate of our charger to be sure that we know that above a certain level, we need to install more chargers in order to decrease some potential queue. Because at the end of the day, it's an issue. Even it's quick, 20 minutes, that's 20 minutes. But sometimes you can see on some sites when you have a lot of traffic during holidays, for instance, hours of queuing. So that's it happens few times a year, but it can be an issue, of course.
So just a quick follow-up, sorry, Martin, on that same, have you thought about offering discounts for off-peak charging, kind of like people do at home? I was just thinking about that. This was a holiday weekend here in the U.S., And I was making a long road trip, and I had to wait for one of the first times. I had to wait a while to use a Tesla supercharger. And I was just thinking, like, this whole crunch is within a 3 or 4 hour period. If I would come back later, it wouldn't be a problem. Now, if you're on a road trip, you can't decide when you're really going to charge. But I bet you there were some people there that did have a shiftable time period on when they could come. Have you thought about that?
Yes, we have, and we have different solution in order to cope with the traffic, to cope with the price of electricity as well, with dynamic pricing in order to raise the pressure on some station. But as well, we could organize our booking. You have a road and you want to be sure that you can charge, so you can book your slots during 10 minutes, for instance. So yes, we are now working on these solutions, which could be quite useful in some period of time during the year. So yeah, there are different solutions. We will test again. We need to find the right solution and the handiest solution. But we are able to do that because, by the way, we own our own technology to monitor, to manage all our charging. All our chargers, any type of chargers we can onboard. That's very important because this technology, because we can offer and we can develop new features as we want, depending of the markets.
Can we talk about reliability? Last week, the lobby group of the UK, the SMMT, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, put forward an idea for a UK regulator, for a government-regulated charge industry, just like electricity would be, or gas, or anything that is an essential service has a government regulator. How do you feel about corporate oversight, sort of government oversight, corporate responsibility, because you are providing an essential service? People are turning up to all, not just yours, but all charging sites. It's late at night, maybe it's a family on their own or a single driver. And sometimes not all charging locations are really well lit, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to make sure that charger is working, that person gets on their way again. How do you feel about having an extra level of oversight? Obviously, you operate here within the EU, although unfortunately we are no longer in the EU. Do we need it, or can we leave companies up to make sure that it gets run well enough on their own?
Well, for me, I think we can let the company to do it, because if we add a new layer of constraints, well, it will cost more, because at the end of the day we'll need to pay for that, and we are not completely stupid in terms of companies. We know that if we don't provide the right service, there will be an issue, a big backlash, and by the way, we need to and we are in a business combination right now at Allego, for instance. We're going to be listed in a few weeks, so we have a publicity over there. So it's essential for us. And by the way, I should have begun by that, but we need to provide the basic service, which is when you come on our station, it works. Okay, maybe simple, but it works. It sounds obvious, but we have many bottlenecks in this. We have the chargers, we have the authorization of the payment, we have mentioned that, we have the payment, we have the communication depending where it is, all the chain. Of course, we have some chargers and charging station in some remote areas, so we need to be sure that it is safe even during the night. So we need to cope with all of these issues, so that's the reason why it's not walk in the park sometimes, our business, but that's our business. And I think that if the regulator is just to say, oh, okay, you need to attend, you need to have light, you need to have something working, okay, but we don't need to. We have our customer that can shout at us if it's not the case. We have an association, you have talked about that, Charge Up Europe, and we make sure that we can make ourselves understand regarding all these subjects. We need to provide security for the payments, all this stuff. So let's try to do our business properly, and we'll see the results. I think we are at the beginning. If something wrong happens, or if there are some issues, Yeah, it would be possible, but right now that's not really the point. What we want is to be ready to roll out quickly, and in the UK, we are in the UK, we have many issues in order to get the permits and to have the DSO in order to have the grid and the capacity, which is a regulated industry. So let's try to do our job, and I do think that all the industry will do it properly.
I think you're right about competition, and people are increasingly vocal, social media, etc., about charging networks. And that can be bad if you're not fixing broken chargers. And I think their reputation can be damaged very quickly. And it does take a while to build it up again. For instance, for our American viewers, in the UK, we have a company called GridServe that took over an old network that had a really bad reputation for reliability. Well, it was the first one. The units were old. I'll try and be kind to them, but they very quickly replaced all the hardware and worked really hard on their own back end. So the billing was seamless. And I think in a very short amount of time, their reputation is very, very good. And equally, there are some big networks that have had reliability problems more recently. And again, fans will take to social media. They'll be in Facebook groups or whatever talking about it. And it does hit reputation quite quickly. But we do have more competition here than perhaps our US viewers, who would probably think only about Electrify America for, you know, high-powered chargers. So I totally agree. For that reason, maybe leave it up to the marketplace, and naturally the good ones will rise, hopefully rise to the surface.
That's what I think, and the industry, I think, is around that. So that's... I really would prefer that we can concentrate on some bottlenecks, regulatory bottlenecks. Mm. And of course, if the industry does not again do properly its job, then it's high time to step in.
Hey, Kyle, I hope I don't mind if you mind if I step in here real quick, just to follow up on the reliability. So that's a huge issue right now for electric vehicle buyers. Tesla is perceived to have like a near perfect reliability, while other networks have had issues. Obviously, it's easier for them because they supply the vehicles and the charging equipment and the software that controls everything. Other networks have to use, you know, charging equipment from different suppliers and work across a variety of platforms from different automakers. And so reliability has seen huge improvements over the past couple of years. But what are the main issues you think that still arise for networks? I'm not sure what the record for Allego is. I assume it's pretty good. I haven't seen anything bad about it. How can you give like EV buyers like total confidence?
We had some issues, and sometimes we have some of them are regarding some payments or some chargers here and there. But okay, we try to manage, because that's quite essential to provide that. So indeed, I do believe that the hardware is better and better. Even though the technology is evolving with a higher power, which is not the same as coping with level 2 chargers. Of course, you have other subjects. I think that cars are more reliable as well. We have experience about what's going on. I think that the backup and the CPO, our platform, for instance. And that's the reason why we mentioned already the fact that we manage more than 6 million charging sessions, meaning that you need to be scaled up because it's very well to have an experience of 1,000 chargers, but when you cope with tens of thousands, that's another cookie. So all in all, I think all the industry is improving. And last but not least, that's true that it's more complex to deal with many manufacturers as we do and with as an import open standard. Compared with a closed loop with the Tesla ones, but the benchmark is here, and I think we will manage to cope with that and to reach it. I'm quite confident in that. More and more, we see that the reliability globally is improving. Again, it is not 100%, but again, I would say if we compare the fuel industry and the fueling station at the beginning, we had some issues with the pumps as well. Now it's quite reliable. We have no issue. So we will make it. There is no issue. That's all the techno is here, the knowledge is here, so it will take a bit time, but now all the EV drivers can be confident that they can charge.
Nice.
So Matthew, when you're talking about expanding the network and we're talking about the future, of course, UK is on your horizon. You've already spoken about that. What are some other markets outside of Europe, maybe perhaps going up into Norway, which is still technically Europe, of course, but not part of the European Union from a currency perspective, I believe. And there's a lot of like weird tax situations going back and forth, especially with the UK. Is this a deterrent? Is there too much competition in some of these markets? Where's your head at on expanding?
Well, at least not for us. We are already active in 14 countries in Europe, in the countries you have mentioned. The competition is rife, but I think that's good for the drivers. I think the best networks with the reliability, amenities, and services around will prevail, which is good. We want to be everywhere. Actually, of course, there are bigger markets like Germany now, which is ramping up very quickly, and because of the population and number of vehicles, it's a huge market. France, UK, but the southern countries in Europe like Italy, Spain will catch up eventually at the end of the day. So we like to be there. So that's the reason why for us Europe is quite key. At present, that's our main market, and we will stick there for the next future. Why? Because if we compare it with the US, for us, basically speaking, and even more if we talk about ultra fast charging, it is much bigger than the US, three times higher. And I do believe that, by the way, the spread between the gap between both markets is increasing a bit right now with what's going on. So that's the reason why we have many, many things to do already in Europe. We will see, depending of opportunity, maybe with partners, what we could bring to the US, our technology and our platform, maybe. But so far we are focused, and we want to do it right in Europe first. And last comment regarding competition. That's true, we have competition, but lastly, we haven't seen new competitor coming up in this fast and ultra fast, because that's something very different than rolling out level 2 chargers. That's bigger beast. We are talking about electric assets on one station between 1.5 2 megawatts, and you have other knowledge, other experience to have, and the ticket to enter this market is much higher, and you need to have the technology to do that.
I have a question, Matthew, about site location. When you're searching for new sites, the priority, I'm sure, is probably the corridors, but then you also have to look at site amenities, right? Do you require that there's a restroom within walking distance, a place to grab a cup of coffee or something like that? That's part one of the question. Part two is, do you see yourself at some point including canopies to provide some cover for the charging stations, whether or not they have solar on them? That's another question, but just to provide some cover for the customers that are getting out of their vehicle and plugging in.
Yes, so that's for us, that's a critical question. Regarding the location of our chargers, when we installed the first one, regarding the fast and ultra-fast, to be honest, the location, well, we consider it should have been good, but well, it was not so good. So that's the reason why we developed specific tools in order to try to forecast the traffic. Okay, to see where should I be and where should I install my charging station. So we have developed something quite, I think, quite advanced in terms of tools, and we keep it ourselves. We do not resell it through SaaS, for instance, because that's quite key in order to have a high utilization rate, in order to have a feedback for our, and a return on our charging station. But in this location and in the output of this of these tools, we have of course some corridors, but most of these sites are in around cities or inside cities, around retail shops, for instance. And that's where we are focused. Why? Because if you stay 20 or even 40 minutes, you want to have something to do. Even if you have a beautiful canopy, it can be a bit long, so you want to grab a cup of coffee. So that's the reason why amenities are quite important, or to have something to do around. That's the reason why we are really focusing on this kind of location. We have some corridors one, and by the way, we work with the European Union's to equip some big corridors. But to be honest, if you want to fast charge your car, if you need to go to a highway to charge, it will be a bit cumbersome. So you want to be able to do it as well around where you live. So that's what we see, actually. So that's the reason why we are focusing on this one. Yes, now in some station, we will put some canopy, and that's what we do on some highways, for instance, because, well, the customer want that, which is not quite the same when you are in a big retail mall, for instance. You don't need any canopy because, well, people, they don't stay in their cars most of the time. It depends on the locations.
Charging networks are hugely capital intensive to roll out. And I understand that you're doing a SPAC style IPO with a Spartan Acquisition Company to help generate more capital in a few weeks. So traditional petrol stations have had, they don't really make a whole lot of money on selling gasoline. Actually, they sell, you know, chips and beer and cigarettes and things, and that's where they make a lot of their profit. And so charging stations don't have that. So there's a lot of talk about, well, how profitable, you know, can charging actually be? So how do you see a profitability? Like, do you see that? I don't know if you're profitable even now, or do you see that on horizon? And it will help drive expansion as well.
Well, yes, we do believe it will be profitable. Otherwise, we won't be in the right. In the business. That's first. Second, we are already operational positive EBITDA. We are maybe one of the first one to reach such milestone. But it shows that we can be. And when we look at the gross margin of our ultra fast charging station, it is quite. It's quite fine and in line with our plans. So we do believe that, yes, it will be quite interesting because we provide a specific service, to be clear. Providing high power rating and to be able to charge in 20 minutes, that's not the same as charging in hours, for instance, for level 2 chargers. It could be a public infrastructure for level 2. At least you have a solution and you have a choice to do it in few hours compared with few minutes. So that's the reason why at the end of the day, I do think that, yes, it will be quite interesting because, well, you have a premium of your time and you don't want to spend a lot of time in charging. That's it. Regarding the other amenities we could afford, right now, we don't need to do that and to have that for our business. We will see along the day, what's going on in this industry. It might change from now and in 10 years. It could be different depending of the experience we will provide with the technology, with the plug and charge, for instance, and others that will come with booking, etc. Yes, but I do believe that there is, yes, a great future in that. And again, we are the essential link between energy and mobility. Without us and without us choosing the right energy, you don't have, in terms of cycle, CO2 free emission mobility. So that's the reason why we are very essential in this loop.
Matthew, sorry to jump in, everyone. I've wanted to ask a little bit about sort of maximizing the capability of the installation at your site. So when you put in, you know, a couple 300 kilowatt chargers, for example, how can you work to maximize that? You've already mentioned bookings, which is something that I've never seen rolled out here in the US. We don't have an example of this. And it just seems to me like a little bit wasteful, maybe because I have the American mindset where someone's going to be like, oh, let me reserve this charger, and they actually don't ever go, and then there's unused capacity. on the same track of unused capacity, because the booking situation we could get into at a different time, what do you think about decentralized, or I should say centralized, power distribution for a site? For example, we've seen a really interesting technology from a company called ChemPower, where they have individual, you know, centralized power and then just dispensers to maximize the install. Is this something you're looking into? How do you maximize this?
Yes. So, of course, regarding, so there is two points. There is one regarding the utilization rate. So, how many cars can charge during a day on one charger? That's one. And second, the way we are going to charge. So, the energy management. And the last example with ChemPower you have mentioned. By the way, we know them. In terms of load managing network, and we can already do that with our software in some places when it is needed with grid constraints. It is compulsory, I would say. So we can do it. But regarding the first one, utilization rate, there are many ways to improve that. So first of all, well, most of the traffic and the utilization on our station takes place during the day. But during the night, we have as well, because it's public and that's very important for us, we can use them, for instance, for other use, for logistics, for instance. And we are talking with some companies to be able to charge, because we can already provide some solution on our charging station with some new usage. Because in some cities in Europe, as of 2025, it will be forbidden to enter the city with a fuel car or even the same with the delivery. So if they want to deliver and to go on their business, they will need to charge somewhere. And we can provide this solution. You can do it on a slow charger. It will take 10 hours. And you need to have many, many, many chargers. So you can do it in half an hour on our charging station. We'll be very happy to cope with that and to accommodate if they want to. So we have different, and that's quite interesting because we don't need to have a revolution here in new way to have charging station for logistics, for events or whatever. No, we can already do many things with our stations without hampering our EV customers during certain period of the day. So that's the way we are going to look at as well our assets, which is I would say global assets. We have already talked about the way that we could sell back some services for the energy or for the power. That's something as well that can be done. So you see that it is much, much more than just a plug somewhere in order to charge.
Really good. So we talked, Matteo, a little bit about network reliability earlier and how the stations just have to work. But things do break. Everything breaks, you know, no matter how robust the new equipment is. Could you talk a little bit about how you deal with that, like how quickly you get stations back online? Do the stations self-report? Do you get a notification when there's a problem, or do you have to wait until a customer makes a complaint? And then what's your process on rolling the trucks to get out there and get those stations working again?
So we have a global monitoring room on for all the countries. And we have some, of course, we have all our base in the different countries we are in. So first of all, we try to make sure that we have different charger on the same station, so that if there is one that has an issue or a failure, we could use another one. So that's quite critical, so that you are not stuck on the station. Okay, so that's I do believe that if you look at that, in that case, 100% of the time, all the station is open. Sometimes you can have an issue with the transfer, and in that case, all the station will be done. Well, it happens. It is industrial issues and breakdown, and in that case, it can take a lot sometimes because we don't have any transfer, or it can be long to have new ones. There we have a problem, but most of the time we have SLA with our different partners in order to be able to change change the charger in 24 hours at least, but because we have the other ones, and in some very specific one we have a 4 hours change depending of this of the situation. We try to have I would say And it will improve, by the way, with warehouse, with spare parts, with a higher utilization rate and number of charging stations along the road. But that's basically how we work. So each time we have a charging station, it is commissioned, it is onboarded with maintenance partner and with our maintenance program and with a warehouse with spare parts to be sure that we can provide that. And we have a different time of to go on site. We can reboot the charging station and the chargers remotely. Of course, we have a screen about that, and we send people when it is when it can be done remotely.
I have one final question. Carry on.
Really quick, Martin, just as a follow-up, one, you mentioned utilization, and that's what I was getting at. Do you look at a site that, say, has a very high utilization rate? You've got four chargers there. They're being used a lot, and one of them goes down. That site gets priority, right? You get a truck out there as soon as possible. You might have another site that has four chargers, and very rarely is more than two of them being used. You know, I was trying to get at, do you look at the utilization and not just say, well, there's three other chargers there? Yeah, but they're being used all the time.
We factor the utilization rate, of course, because we know that there will be a high demand. So if we have a high utilization and it broke down, it means that we might have a queue, and we don't want to have that. And interestingly speaking, it's more interesting, by the way, to change the one with a high utilization rate than the one with less utilization rate as well. So that's the reason why we try to use this kind of info in real time. But we want as well to look at where our next stations are, because if they are very far, we try to have a solution for our customers anyway. Okay, because we want to provide a service and to have a solution for them, because it will change with more and more chargers. But we had very bad experience with people trying to charge, and maybe you have the experience. And I have some friends and people around me with this kind of experience. They couldn't charge, so it's not possible any longer to have this kind of solution.
Final question from me. I know we're up against the time, and it might not even necessarily be the Allego business, although I believe you do have some 22 kilowatt AC posts here in London. Over here in Europe, you know, many of our cities are hundreds, if not thousands, of years old, and they're not built for charging electric vehicles off-road overnight. So as someone working in the EV industry, I feel that the 60% of people who have a driveway, we don't need to worry about them. They can charge overnight. What are your thoughts on your favorite solutions for everyone else who lives in old terraced housing? All my houses in London were always terraced houses, or even apartment or flat livers as well. How can we make sure that they don't have to just once a week go and charge on a high-powered charger? What is it? Is it pop-up chargers from the pavement? Is it stalls lining, you know, lampposts or something? What do you think?
Yeah, that solution here in the UK over there. No, we believe in fast and ultra-fast charging in a charging station. When you need to drive and you need to charge, you spend 10 or 15 minutes, 20 minutes to do that, and you get out. That's the way we see it. Why? Because that's very well to have people with a garage, but by the way, 70% of the households in the Netherlands do not have any garage or driveway, so they need to go somewhere, and we need so it's a lot of people. You cannot manage to put all chargers on the pavements, because in terms of efficiency of public space, I think that's not good. And you are not going to fight with your neighbors just to have the slot during the night for 8 hours. So let's be practical. It's the same with a fueling station. You don't have a fueling station in your house. Okay, you use one, and you can, and it will be the same. So, but we need to have more, because the timing, even though it's quick, it's much longer than 5 minutes of the fueling station. So that's the reason why it's different.
But batteries are getting bigger and charging is getting faster. Yeah. So it's a problem that we can see being fixed at some point.
Yeah, but you know, in London, if you have one phase to charge your huge battery of 100 kilowatts, how long will it take?
Yeah, it's more than all night. So it's more than 10, 14 hours. Yeah.
And you will need to look at the TV and the match and etc. And you want to organize. So okay, let's be efficient here.
Cool. Thank you.
That's interesting. I didn't expect you to say that because right now I believe Allego has like a lot of 11 kilowatt chargers in neighborhoods. Like, you know, it looks like on the site, I got on there really briefly last night, mm-hmm. and it looks like you have like a lot of like 2 and 3 11 kilowatt level 2 chargers, you know, scattered around neighborhoods. So, you know, so are you thinking about you're moving away from that? Somewhat,
we are moving away. Yes, we are moving away. We have done a lot in order to bring it and to bring a solution for our customers. We think that now there are more efficient solution with bigger charging station with new technology. Because when we began this rollout, I would say a trusted solution was the 22 kilowatt, not maybe the 50 and the 300 and most of it, the cars could not withstand any big rating charging. So that's the reason why it was not possible. And as well, we have some plug-in cars at the time, and they cannot withstand DC. So that's the reason why it was the right solution. Now that's different. So that's the reason why we are moving to fast and ultra fast. But on all our station, we make sure that we can have an AC, a level 2, 22, because some customers have plug-in, they want to charge, and maybe you still have a Nissan with a CHAdeMO, so we need to have a CHAdeMO because we need to provide a solution.
Interesting. I don't know if anyone has another question, you can go ahead.
Yeah, I just think back to this inner city urban hub. I visited a location in New York recently called Revel Charging. They put in, I don't know, maybe 20 or 25 DC fast chargers. And I thought it was a really genius solution because New York City especially, and London, big high capacity cities, no room for cars, no room for people. There are some issues though with DC fast charging in urban environments, especially in the winter time more than others, because, you know, living here in Colorado, maybe I'm swayed and I live in this world, but like batteries get cold and then they'll take 3-4 hours to charge at a DC fast charger, unless you have on route preconditioning for a long period of time. And this isn't so much a question about your charging network, but you do work with OEMs, you're in the, you know, business. Do you think we'll see a trend towards battery chemistry or work from the OE side to accept higher charging rates under colder temperatures?
I do think so. Yeah, I do think so, because depending of the environment, it can be an issue. So that's the reason why we need to work on that. And that's the reason why as well it's complex, because maybe in Chicago or northern in Canada, where with weather conditions are very different from Europe, for instance, or in part of Europe, it could be a subject. So yes, it will evolve in the time, but technology will be there. And we are quite confident in that, and it is improving, and it gets some big rides in the next year. So we will manage again.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Dominic, you're still muted. Sorry.
It's all right. I'm just trying to do some things here. So I'd like to thank you, Matthew, for joining us today. I believe is everyone good? No more questions? Okay. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. You have a lot going on.
Thank you very much for all your questions. We're very happy to answer. Very interesting. Thank you.
We have a couple of minutes, so if you want, do you have like any sort of like something that we didn't touch on, maybe that you wanted to say to like our audience or your European customers?
Well, the main subject for us, that's the I would say the operation with the SPAC you mentioned, and I think that's for our US viewers, it could be interesting to see how it works, because you could get a flavor about, and you could follow the company in the European market, which is, I think, for once, well advanced compared with the US, and it could be a way or a solution as well, the way we provide that to the US customers, so it can give some ideas about for the US market to look at what Europe does right now in a EV infrastructure environment.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of today's bonus episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can find Tom Logney at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Matthew, are you on Twitter?
Excuse me?
Are you on Twitter?
No, I am not on Twitter. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right. No, that's probably a wise decision. All right. So, yeah, we'll see you all again this Friday. Ciao.